Right, well, we're talking the science of fusion, and this is a branch of science that's actually still quite young. So as we're hearing, people are looking at different ways of achieving fusion in the lab. We're hearing about how different forms of hydrogen might be used at very, very high temperatures to create plasma, and from that, the fusion process might start happening. But now we have Kate Lancaster with us in the studio. She's from the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, and she's looking at generating fusion using lasers. Now, hi, Kate. Thanks for coming on The Naked Scientist.
Hiya, no problem.
It's great to have you here. So first of all, why lasers? Where do they fit into this whole picture of fusion in the laboratory?
Okay, so ever since lasers were invented in the 60s, there was an idea that you could use lasers to drive fusion. Essentially, there's more than one way to skin a cat with lasers, but I'll describe the current most popular way of doing it. Essentially, it's like a petrol engine where you have a compression phase where you use long pulse lasers to compress a fuel capsule made of deuterium and tritium, the two isotopes of hydrogen that Steve was talking about earlier. And then the second phase is to heat this. Now, the long pulse lasers that I'm describing are a billionth of a second, so not particularly long in your field of view, but actually acres of time in laser terms. The point of compressing the capsule is basically in order to move the atoms much, much closer together. So you compress the material to basically hundreds of times solid density.
And how are you doing that compression?
So basically what happens is the laser hits the surface. So you've got symmetrically irradiated capsules. So you irradiate all round a sphere. The laser hits the surface and heats up some of the surface, which flies away. And basically, due to Newton's third law, the rest flies forward. So if you can do this symmetrically, all of the material flies forward and compresses together to high density.
So it's like a sphere and it's all coming towards the kind of the core,
exactly,
nucleus, if you like, of,
yeah,
the sphere.
Exactly.
And you said that the the lasers are very, very quick and short in duration. Are there lots of them? Is it a continuous stream of them coming on and off?
No. Essentially, the discompression phase part takes the duration of the laser pulse. So a few nanoseconds, which is this billionth of a second, is a nanosecond.
But that's enough to heat up this sphere of matter.
The heating part comes next.
Okay, I'm stepping ahead. Sorry.
So basically, as I said, it's like a petrol engine. So you've done the compression part, but now you need the spark plug. And so what you do is you have an even more intense, more powerful laser beam, which is injected in. And what happens there is it actually, when it interacts with the dense material, produces hot particles, like electrons, for example, which then stream in and deposit their energy and raise it to the 100 million degrees centigrade that you need for fusion to occur. So this sort of, we know quite a lot about the compression side of things, because, as I said, this has sort of been around since the 1960s. It's the spark plug bit, which is the sort of unknown thing, and what I spend most of my time trying to investigate, how these particles are generated, how they do the heating.
And so how is this, have you got this to actually to work yet? Or are you still really piddling around with that ignition part?
So essentially, laser facilities at the moment are only just being built which have any capability of really properly demonstrating such a technique. Now, there were proof of geometry. I'm not even going to say proof of principle experiments. There was a proof of geometry experiment, so that you could compress and inject some short pulse heating beam in Japan back in 2001. And they were very successful experiments, and they sort of spawned this whole field of interest, you know, that really helped. But, you know, essentially we have a lot of work to do in order to demonstrate it. But basically what happened, we're trying to get a laser facility built in Europe called Hyperlaser. It's not quite the same scale as ITER, but it's certainly going to be a very, very huge facility, which will basically try to test this technique and try to get gain out of it, so actually get fusion energy out. I mean, it won't generate electricity, but again, it's going to be one of those things where we can actually try to prove the principle. So if you're interested in the details of the website, it's www.hyper-laser.org, and they'll find all the details of this project. We're currently in the preparatory phase at the moment. We've got money from Europe to really try and design this laser, so it's very exciting.
And I'm quite keen to know what sort of scale you think this might be on. And also, you know, really, when is it going to happen, do you think? Mm-hmm. Wait, if you had to take a guess on it, when are we going to see this?
Oh, as a sort of technique?
Or maybe when might it roll out as actually a way of doing
it? Okay,
this?
Well, so the timescales are, I mean, Hyper is going to take sort of 8 years to sort of de-risk and design, and then should be operational by the early 2020s. So after that, you know, it's going to be at least 20 years after that. So, you know, it's a long-term thing. But the fact is, it's so attractive that you just have to continue to work on it.
So we're going to have you back in years to come to see what happens. Thanks for
I hope so.
Thanks very much, Kate, and good luck with all your research. And
thank you.
That's fantastic insight into how lasers might help us unpick the conundrum of fusion.
It's Kate Lancaster from the Rutherford Appleton Lab there. And this is The Naked Scientist with Chris and Helen. We're talking about nuclear fusion. If you have a question, the email address is chris@thenakedscientist.com.
Lifting the lab coat on the world's best science. The Naked Scientists.